This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Tuesday Takeover with Elf Lyons on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, listeners. So, from the mysterious allure of Thom Yorke's soundtrack in Suspiria to the nostalgia-inducing work of John Williams, we all have our favourites when it comes to film soundtracks. John Williams had the ability to scare us from All Going in the Water in 1975 with Jaws, and most hotel corridors are terrifying if you imagine Wendy Carlos and Rachel Elkins' infamous The Shining soundtrack playing behind you. That's what you can currently listen to right now. Music has the ability to transform a moment, and I think we can all agree, make or break a film. Thus, as one unknown person famously quipped, everyone has one great book in them, I believe we all have one great film, and this is what I'm keen to find out. So, I'm going to now take this very eerie music away. Welcome to my Tuesday Takeover. This is Elf Lyons. I'm in charge of FUBAR Radio for the next 2 hours. I am very excited. I have had some beta blockers and I have eaten quite a lot of chocolate. And I have the wonderful guest, Johnny Wu, who is just sashaying over on the other side of me.
Am I sashaying? I'm kind of like... fist pump in the air.
Your fist pump in the air. You look so excited.
I'm very excited.
So Johnny Wu, I've invited him because I love him and he's brilliant. And this is it. He has an unlimited budget to make his dream film. He could have perhaps already made this film. This film could have already won all the Oscars or all the awards in the world. I don't know. It's totally up to Johnny. So from the dream actors, dream cast, director, background, whatever, the choice is yours. Beforehand, Johnny sent us some tracks. And he is going to now take us through this film.
Oh, my God. This is the thing. I don't think I read the email properly. Because when you said, I just said you've got an unlimited budget, you know, got awards and this, I immediately go low budget. Maybe this is a default setting in my life. It's not actually a default setting at the moment because I'm in the middle of trying to get a new bathroom and I've gone for really expensive marble tiles. But in terms of kind of this kind of art kind of thing, I've immediately gone for low budget. Low budget Brit.
I think that's because you're an artist. Used to going, we couldn't possibly perform in a nice room with central heating and air conditioning. No, because we're so used to performing in damp basements. But no,
exactly.
You can be wherever you want to be,
you know,
Johnny.
I think if we're starting off... low budget, and then as the film progresses, we'll find out those moments when we get the way where maybe during the course of production, we suddenly get these kind of like random injections of cash.
It's sort of like, I'm not sure if you've ever seen the Twilight films. I once went and saw them all back to back at midnight at the BFI, and it was the best decision I've ever made.
Wow.
But the one where Bella is pregnant, they have clearly spent all the budget on making her look pregnant with a vampire baby.
Wow.
It looks like she's got scurvy.
Wow.
But all the money's gone on
the
that.
The money's gone on making someone look pregnant. That's fantastic. Yeah, you can probably do that for free.
They could have probably done that. I know
might
people
take nine
do
months,
the,
but...
Yeah. I know people do the Ed Fringe so much better than they did in that.
Yeah.
Yes. So tell me a bit about... what are your favourite films?
Okay, my favourite films are... I know what these films are. I'm very clear. Secrets and Lies... on which it's going to feature a lot. Mm-hmm. Mike Lee, that is definitely one of my favourite films. I watched it very recently. It's very hard to kind of find, actually. It was very hard to find on DVD and when everyone was watching DVDs. And it's quite tricky to find. It's not like on Netflix, but I found it on Amazon. It's a Mike Lee film. Whenever I watch it, you laugh, you cry. It's kind of like... The great thing about Mike Lee is that he's kind of... he's really good at capturing this kind of like incessant chitter-chatter of kind of people. And when I go home to my parents, it feels like I'm in a Mike Lee film. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like witching, and nothing's actually being said and nothing's actually happening. But beneath it, you know, there's a big fat skeleton in the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, that's one of my favourite films. The other one is Billy Elliot. So we might get some Billy Elliot in. I didn't even think of that. Billy Elliot, you know, dancing.
And you're a fantastic dancer.
Oh, thanks.
You are incredible. Like, for anyone who's not seen Johnny Wu perform, he is... You're a polymath of skills, aren't you? You're like a drag extraordinaire.
Well, we're going to bring them all into this film
today.
Bring them
all into this
and
film.
And the other film, which I really love, there's a couple more, which I said, but I don't know how we'll fit this in, is Dogville.
Dogville, which is
Lars von Trier's, where he kind of like painted the set on the floor of the studio in lines, which is an actually incredible idea. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh my god!
I had to study Lars von Trier.
Oh my god! It's absolutely amazing, isn't it? Nicole Kidman is cold and icy. She's the victim, but you kind of wanted to get it. You just be like, yeah, get it. And then she's kind of that when she's dragging around that metal hoop, dragging it about, and the kids are.
And it has Paul Bettany in it as well.
Paul Bettany in it as well.
Problem with Lars von Trier is he's known for making his actors never want to work with him ever again. Like Bjork after Dancer in the Dark was said that she would now never perform in any films because it was so horrific to work with.
Lauren Bacall, I think she did both. I think she did two. And then she did Mandalay. She only did a very small part in Mandalay.
I remember I had to go on a terrible date. I didn't know it was going to be a terrible date at the time, but I went on this date with this man and we went to ZZ's, which is fine. Blimmin' love a pizza. But he ordered for me. He ordered on my behalf. He said, "You won't know what's good to eat because you're
without you even kind of like
yeah, your palate's not yet because he was slightly older."
Oh my god, how old was he?
It doesn't matter.
How old were you?
I was about 18, 19.
Okay.
And he was, you know, he was
pizza. What can your palate not recognise on a pizza?
I know. I think it's fair to say he wasn't the best guy. Yeah. And then he said, "Well, because you know, I think it's only fair that you get to pick the film." And so there were lots of different films on, and I just went, I really want us to go and see Antichrist by Lars von Trier, if you've ever seen it, there's a beautiful scene where a woman cuts a man's penis off. It's either that or another part of his genitals. It was quite squeamish, but I thought it sort of subtly got the message across that.
God, that's a perfect date really, movie. If they can survive that, you know, you might have a good one.
He's the one.
Yeah, I've only seen a few Lars von Trier's, but Dogville is one of my favourite films. Wizard of Oz, of course.
Yeah.
It's there. Wizard of Oz is there. The Hours, I love. You're talking about soundtracks, actually, and The Hours has got a killer soundtrack.
I feel like anything, you put Meryl Streep in anything and it's a safe space. You know you're going to get the drama, you're going to get some really beautiful piano and cello music in the background, you're going to get a fantastic speech.
But that's a good film. And Julianne Moore is amazing in it. And Toni Collette is just so
Are they all going to make an appearance in this film?
Let's get them all in. Maggie Smith has to get in here too.
Okay, so let's crack on first of all with your film. Mikely Inspired. You are the
Mikely
director.
Mikely Inspired.
What is the title of your film, Johnny?
Oh, I didn't know we had to have a title.
You have to have a title. I put you on the spot.
Secrets. My Dad's an Elvis Presley Impersonator.
My Dad's an Elvis Presley Impersonator.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That all comes out.
Okay.
So this film is kind of based loosely on true factual information.
Would you say this is a semi-autobiographical film?
And there are some secrets in here. There's a big family secret in here.
So people who followed your oeuvre of work, they'll come and see this film for the first time at the Curzon, at the Prince Charles, and they'll go, wow,
Sundance,
this explains so much
Venice
about Johnny.
Film festival.
Okay, and who are the cast? So is the title protagonist, is it you, Johnny?
Oh God, I am the title. I am the main character. Who can play me? Help me out here. Who's going to play me? Because I'm going to be about 16, 17. Who's like a 16, 17 year old actor?
I'm trying to think about who would be good at dancing. I mean, if we're putting ballet into it, my immediate thought is the gentleman who plays Gendry in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Because he's young, he's boyish, he's charming.
Yeah.
But then it's me,
kind of like a 16, 17 year old me and an 18, 19 year old sister. I don't know who the young things are. Who's the Hunger Games actress? What's her name?
Jennifer Lawrence.
She can play my sister.
Jennifer Lawrence playing my sister. Maybe like a young Kevin Bacon from Footloose could play you. No. He's quite good looking.
How about Eddie Redmayne?
Eddie Redmayne is playing a young you. So Eddie Redmayne, when he was 16, when he played in that film where he played Julianne Moore's incestuous son.
Yeah.
That sort of period.
Let's have him. He can play me. And what's her name? We should write these things down so we remember who's playing
who. I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing.
Okay, and I know what the opening scene is already.
Okay, so tell me. So this comes to... we know what the opening track is.
Yeah.
It's... Shout to the Top by
Shout to the Top by the Star Council, which we're going to play in a minute, but
please explain. So this track comes on. What is happening?
Opening scene. My sister, who in the 80s at the time was a mod.
Mm-hmm.
So and there's this really cool picture of me and my sister when we're kind of like 16, 17. It's the only decent picture we've got of us on holiday. And my sister's got this kind of like beautiful kind of like shoulder length bob. and she's wearing like a cycling top, you know, with kind of like the red white. It's a mm-hmm. white cycling top with the red and blue stripes on it. She's wearing a pair of kind of she's being aware of kind of like dog tooth capri pants okay. or something, or kind of like, you know, with or the ones with like the stirrups on, mm-hmm. and was it kind of a little bit of a mod look, and she's kind of a bit like that, and I'm kind of wearing this.
She's leaning casually.
She's so casual, and I'm wearing this sort of kind of like capped sleeve, little kind of like grey and pink sort of t-shirt with a pair of pale grey pleated front dress trousers on.
Okay.
How cool is that? And I've got this kind of flicky sort of hair. And it's the only time we've ever looked cool ever in a picture. We always look terrible. But anyway, so that's what we're doing. And it's in my sister's bedroom. So there's blue carpet, pink carpet. And she's teaching me. Maybe we keep going around the house and there's different carpet in every room. And we go in the bathroom and there's carpet in the bathroom.
So it's slightly stylized. You go from stylized, one room stylized, and it's red
stylized
carpet,
chins,
yellow.
Stylized chins.
Perfect.
Stylized chins. So my sister is teaching me how to dance like a mod to the Style Council. So that's the opening scene.
So this is a dance sequence, montage.
It was like this. If anyone's watching.
If anyone can see what he's doing, he's sort of shuffling backwards and forwards with his muscular arms. Yeah.
So that's how it's going to be. But I'd been very skinny arms at the time and I'd been like that. And so that's happening. So it's setting up in Mike Leigh films. You get thrown into action straight away. It just happens.
And it's joyful. And we're seeing the youth. We're seeing siblings connecting.
It's kind of sort of bickering a little bit at the same time. And there's probably an Adamant kind of like record in the corner because she was really into Adamant.
Well, who isn't into Adamant?
I know, right?
When he's in Derek Jarman's Jubilee as
but
well.
But that was a bit earlier. Maybe kind of like the Style Council coming a bit later for her. And Mum's downstairs making dinner. So you kind of have Mum, Dad's coming in. He's coming in from the garden. So you kind of got the camera's moving around. Maybe it's a continuous camera following us about.
Who's playing your mother? I sort of
Judi Dench.
Judi Dench.
Yeah,
Judi Dench.
Young Judi Dench.
Because
I think my mum looks a bit like Judi Dench anyway.
So for the listeners, we're about to play the first track.
But
of
who's
going to
play my dad? Who's going to play my dad?
Who plays your dad?
50, 60-year-old actor.
Timothy Spall, maybe? No.
Oh, very, very Mike Leigh.
Yeah, Timothy Spall
really
is evident Mike Leigh.
Oh, maybe my mum's played by what's her name? Beverly. What's her name?
Come on. I don't know.
Someone's got to find this out for us.
All I can think of is Leslie Manville because of...
Oh, I love Leslie Manville. She's great.
She's absolutely fantastic.
I don't know if she can play my mum. She might have to come later. Who played Beverly in Abigail's Party? Who is it?
Blice something. Oh, goodness. I can't hear... I haven't got my headphones on.
Don't worry about it.
Wait, I've got them on.
We'll get there.
Iva Steadman.
Alison Steadman,
there we go.
Iva Steadman, though, as well. Maybe Iva Steadman's got a bit part.
Okay, so...
Alison Steadman's my mum, Timothy Spall's my dad, what's her name? Jennifer Lawrence is my sister, and I'm being played by Eddie Redmayne.
Fantastic, with that note...
And they're dancing around to Dance to the Top, Shout to the Top.
By the Star
Let's
Castle.
Go.
Bottom is not the last, but shout to the top. shout to the top, shout. You're gonna shout to the top, shout. We're gonna shout to the top, shout. We're gonna shout to the top, shout.
Track of your film Shout to the Top. For anyone listening now, this is like Desert Island Discs but with cinema, and we've got the amazing drag superstar cult hero that is Johnny Woo, talking us about his dream film. So that was the opening sequence, the dance montage with
the dance montage in the film. My dad is an Elvis Presley impersonator. Fantastic. But not just dance montage, but we were kind of, there was this kind of like whittering chat going on. That's the thing about Mike Lee. There's just this banal banter that happens.
It's inaudible, but it's human.
It's audible, it comes in and out.
That's like me and my sister.
And then mum's like, oh, come on, everyone downstairs for dinner. I'm like, what's for dinner? She's like, oh, it's mince and gravy. And oh, no, not mince and gravy. And then Jeff, my dad, comes in, played by Timothy Spall, and he's kind of like washing kind of like paintbrushes in the sink. And he's like, oh, Jeff, why are you washing paintbrushes in the sink? Oh, I've got to wash the paintbrushes in the sink because otherwise they're dirty. Oh, but we're going to have dinner in a minute. So it's all that kind of chat.
And then it cuts to...
And I'm even thinking, but wait a minute, I've added another element.
Okay.
So this doesn't usually happen in a Mike Lee, but we can go a bit into the void here. I don't know if you've seen that movie, which is really, really weird. Or I filmed a film called Irreversible, which is really heavy and really hardcore. But the film techniques are interesting.
Yes.
Because it's like, you know, when they have a continuous kind of camera that follows you absolutely everywhere and goes in and out. We've got a bit of that
going on. Sort of like Birdman.
Yeah,
the camera never cuts, it seems.
Okay, so we're setting it up, and this leads into Mike Lee-inspired Happy Go Lucky, which is about driving. And me and my dad have a driving lesson. And me and my dad used to realistically kind of argue and fight continuously to the point where we almost came to fisticuffs, but we used to really fight. But this could be like a sort of funny family kind of thing where you get to see me and my dad driving. And I can remember I was a little bit dyslexic when it came to driving, so I couldn't tell my left and right. Mm-hmm. So he'd say go left and I'd go right, or left and he'd say speed up and I'd put the brakes on, or he'd say brake and I'd put my foot on the gas.
Because
and
then, you're intimidated because it's your dad teaching you to drive. And he was the worst teacher than your own parent.
And there was definitely a time when he was like, he said to me, we're coming up to a roundabout, and he said go straight over at the roundabout, and I drove around over the roundabout.
And what music is in the background? Do you remember?
Cecilia by Simon and Garfunkel, because that was
serious. So as you're driving over the roundabout.
Over the roundabout, this is going on and it's coming in and out. So we've got this funny little thing going on. We're kind of whispering on and all this kind of stuff. And maybe in this, while this is kind of, it comes out that my dad isn't my biological father. Which is true, and he knows that. It's not a secret, and it's like this is not like a big family kind of like secret. It's true. So, but I think in terms of narrative, a film is quite a good humdinger, isn't it? To knock it to
in the first act as well.
In the first act, it comes out straight away. You're not my dad. I say, and then it's like, blah, 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 blah. And then we have some silly conversation about that. But we've planted it. We've planted the seed of him not being my dad. Okay, and so is that the end of that scene?
That is the end of that scene.
So I've driven over. We've had an argument, and then I go to work.
And where do you work at the time?
I think the next day, I'm working at Woolworths, of course, on Chatham High Street. It's true. In the '80s, I was a Saturday supervisor.
So that's pretty impressive. How old were you?
I was 16.
16 and a supervisor.
And I had a big kind of like bunch of keys. Mm-hmm. And I'd be strutting up and down mm-hmm. on the kind of like the sort of, it wasn't even laminate flooring then, wasn't it? It was kind of a plastic wood flooring.
Linoleum? Is that what it is?
No. Linoleum's actually quite posh because that's the time.
I just love the word linoleum.
Yeah, because I'm actually trying to get doing my flat up at the moment. And linoleum's quite expensive because it's a natural fibre.
But that's why you've gone to marble.
Did you know it was a natural fibre?
No, I did not.
It's actually all natural.
See, for the listeners, you're not just learning about cinema and music, you're also learning about basic
household
tips.
So Woolworths, you'd be going up and down in Woolworths and you'd have nylon trousers, nylon shirt, nylon tie.
Completely flammable.
And you know what? This is actually true too. It's full of truth. And my friend Laura Hobbs was working with me at the time. She can be played by who? That new one who's just won the
Olivia
the
Colman?
BAFTA.
No,
Olivia Colman. A young Olivia Colman.
Yeah. Is playing.
She is perfect.
Laura Hobbs.
And who can play the manager? Who can play the shop manager? Big burly guy. What's his name? Ooh, the one who's in with glasses. He plays everybody who's old in British films. He was in...
Jim Broadbent.
Yes.
For anyone who's listening, by the way, if you want to like tweet into Fubar Radio or email us at Tuesday Takeover with your suggestions, if you think that Johnny is missing out on a key British actor. Who
Jim Broadbent is the owner of the store. It's a cameo for him. Leslie Manville still not to come in. And I fancy the security guard who's played by...
I don't know what your type is.
Keanu Reeves.
And yes, because he is an underrated performer.
And I can remember I actually did fancy the security guard. He was really dorky and had a really long nose.
So did you know you were definitely gay at this point?
Oh, absolutely. And the day I'm actually working is, it's kind of fancy dress day. And me and Laura have decided to swap uniforms. I'm dressed as Laura in like an apron. And she's in my outfit. And whilst I'm up the stairs putting up a fitting, someone comes and pinches my bum because it's the 80s and you still did that and says to Laura, is this like when you have to have a certain amount of disabled people in the shop, meaning do we have to have a certain amount of transgender people working for Woolworths? They probably wouldn't have known transgender at the time, so probably just a transvestite. That actually happened.
So it's sort of introducing as well, you know, sexuality into the mix. Finding a place where you fit
but
in
I'm
your
fun.
Home.
No, I'm fun.
You're fun, you're
I'm
happy.
Fun.
And,
I've know, got responsibility. I'm
Sally Hawkins and Happy Go Lucky.
In life. It's fun. I've got friends. I've kind of like.
And during this,
all this
scene,
kind of
what
stuff.
Is being played in the background?
Warrior in Woolworths, of course. Warrior, warrior, worry, warrior. So perfect, but also because it's got a bit of a beat, I think, and then all these points, I think there are dance elements. I'm seeing dance. We start off dancing.
Doing the
maybe,
mod.
Maybe it's a little bit, maybe there's that kind of like sort of Lars von Trier-y Dance from the Darky vibe of how all these little bits of musical were coming in.
Oh, hindsight, have you seen The Favourite? There is a beautiful moment when Rachel Weisz is dancing with Joe Alwyn together, and suddenly, despite the fact that, you know, it's in the olden days, because I can't remember the actual period of time, they're all voguing.
Yes.
It's sort of adding little modern elements into the, you know, the
so,
past.
So I'm thinking.
Archive.
So I'm thinking the Woolworths scene becomes a big dance scene,
so
and it goes in there, and it goes out into Chatham High Street, and then everyone's dancing to Warrior and Woolworths.
Fantastic. Yeah. Again, a bit like Lars von Trier dancing in the dark when there's that sequence and Björk dances with the corpse in her house while she's singing.
Yes, and I have a conversation in the and someone buys an Elvis Presley record.
And is this when?
And I kind of think, and then we have a sudden flashback scene to when I'm in the loft looking through old photos for pictures of my real dad, because I never actually saw one, and that's actually true also. And I come across some old photos, and I think one of them looks a bit like Elvis Presley, so I kind of start fantasising that my dad's Elvis Presley. It's a bit of a tangent, but I had to get it in.
Oh, that was perfect. Is this the moment when Always On My Mind by Elvis Presley comes in, or is
no,
that
No, because
later?
There's a big reveal later on. So after I've gone being dressed as kind of Laura Hobbs, I get back into my normal clothes and I go and meet my first shag and have sex for the first time with a guy called Peter Hook, who is real, and he was the... he was the rehearsal pianist at the Kentish Players Amateur Operatic and Dramatic Society.
This is very much becoming into an autobiographical
film. It's totally autobiographical.
It's like reenactment.
Well, I'm writing my own book, so now I'm making the film.
Brilliant. And what's the sound? Is there a soundtrack? When you're
it's
two
a
are
sin!
Taking, it's a sin when
it's
you're taking
sin.
Off each other's clothes. Are we going to play the full track? It's a sin.
Yes, let's listen to it. Let's listen
so
to it all.
This is the first time you have sex.
But can we kind of add some kind of like scene directions during the song?
Of course
yeah,
we
okay.
can. You're in charge.
Okay.
This is, you know, you both see each other in their eyes. There's some sexual chemistry.
So I've already... So basically, do you want me to tell you how we came about having my first rendezvous with Peter Hook?
Of course.
I'm actually trying to hunt him down. He lives in a water tower in Faversham.
So, Peter, if you're listening, if you could just tweet in or email us now, if anyone knows Peter, that would be fantastic if we can perhaps get him and Johnny together.
I was 16, he was 28. At the time, okay. He wouldn't let me tell anyone because the age of consent was 21. Okay, he lured me back to his water tower by finding out that I did A-level history.
Okay, and I didn't know what you were going to say then.
He said that he did history too, and I should go back and... if I needed help with an essay.
And was he lying? Was this just a chatter?
It's true, but I got an E for the essay. This is so... That's so Mike Lee. It's so banal. It's untrue. And what happens there should be sort of some... Does this become a dance piece?
Maybe you're just swaying very slowly together and it's sort of like, if we're adding a dreamscape, a bit like in Labyrinth with David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly when they're dancing together in that glow and they keep on looking at each other and you're walking around the space and perhaps he keeps on quoting dates and times at you from historical
and
periods.
I think because it was a start of sexual relationship and I kind of saw him a few times, so that throughout the course of the song, I actually come to and fro. So we go back to Woolworths. I'm telling my friends about shagging this guy, and he drives a Jaguar, by the way, and he's a property developer, and he's got a fridge full of champagne. It's all true. Fridge full of champagne, but I think my life's actually the only interesting thing. And
that's why you're making a film about it.
And you know what? I'm making a film about it. And I didn't want champagne. Do you know what I wanted?
Orange juice.
Martini Rosso.
Of course he did.
Martini Rosso. And so he went and
bought... You're still wearing nylon at this point.
He went and bought all the versions of martini out there when I next went round.
And so are we cutting in between you making out, making love to each other, and then cutting
so I'm enjoying
everyone?
It. So I'm enjoying it. So I'm telling people all about it. Oh, so who's playing him? Who's playing him? Who's playing my lover? Who's playing my lover?
Goodness, I don't know.
Do you know what? I'm going to go mad.
Freddie Mercury.
I'm going to go mad. I'm going to go absolutely mad with this one.
You know what?
I'm going to
okay.
go really off-piste.
Yeah, go for it.
Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno played the Incredible Hulk. But when he was young and as a bodybuilder, he was really, really good looking. And I might actually have to kind of body double up. I will body double up on the scenes when Eddie Redmayne is having sex with Peter Hook, played by Lou Ferrigno, so that I can actually be the one actually having sex with Lou Ferrigno.
Okay, so we actually get Luther for this production.
We actually didn't. It's actually me having
How
sex.
How old is Luther now?
Lou. He'd probably be about 70 old.
But you know what? That adds to
but
the reality
gone,
of this. Because what is age? What
and
is
no,
gender?
But also, we've got to remember we're just going in and out of time here. We've actually gone back in time. I've got so much money, I'm able to cryogenically bring back people into their heyday.
And why shouldn't you?
So there you go. It's a bit
if
of a weird one. But
do
you know what?
Yep.
Peter Hook actually looked a bit like, just so you know who he is, he looked very much like Roland Riveron.
I do not know who that
Roland
is.
Roland Riveron was from Raw Sex, the duo from French and Saunders show. You know, there's a music duo.
No.
Okay.
I will say now for the listeners, there is an age difference between Johnny and I, because Johnny is a grown-up adult man who has lived, and I haven't seen
and
things...
And you like haven't barely tasted pizza.
I've barely tasted pizza. I don't know. Zizi's
is too
posh for me.
You actually do not know what mozzarella is.
I don't know what mozzarella
you
is.
You have not had the anchovy on your tongue.
It's just white cheddar to me.
Yeah.
So, we're going to fade this song out now. So, to be honest, I like the fact that you think Lou Ferrigno is the weirdest choice when we've already got Keanu Reeves playing a
security guard,
which isn't even a title role in this film.
It's a minor scene. Okay. And, okay, we're just about to go for the drama now.
Okay, what's happening now?
I come home really late.
Are you drunk?
Lou Ferrigno, yes. Let's be drunk.
A bit aggressive. So, the conflict in... there's a room for Romeo Brass when suddenly the friendship starts to falter and splinter. Mm. Paddy Considine's getting in the way. Mm. You come home, you're drunk, you're late, you've had loads of sex with Lou.
My dad's locked the front door.
Because he's still angry. Because he's going fed over the roundabout.
Well, no, because we've jumped ahead by about 6 months now. He's just tired of me coming home late. Yeah. It's banal, remember. It's Mike Lee. Everything is banal. Mm-hmm. Everything is really everyday. I can't. My sister's somewhere. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where the family are. Anyway, we have a massive row chasing me around the garden with a slipper.
With a slipper?
Yeah.
Okay. What type? For the visual.
Marks and Spencer's.
A Marks and Spencer's Dull, slipper.
Marks
that's
and Spencer's
real
kind of slipper.
Mike Lee, and he's just. And Timmy Spall's running around after Timothy Eddie Sports. Redmayne going, "You don't respect me.
Yeah.
You don't respect the family."
Massive row. Mum comes out. She's kind of like Judy Dench comes out.
She's got her hair in curls.
No, she hasn't got curls because she's just had a new Afro perm.
Oh, she's new. Has she got the lilac hair of the time? I seem to remember.
She's not that old.
I don't know.
She'd have been about 48.
48? Yeah. She could have lilac hair if she wants to.
Do you want her to have lilac hair?
I think visually, if we're really pushing maybe the boat and we've cryogenically brought back Lou, I think Judy Dench should have lilac
maybe
hair.
Maybe her hair keeps changing colour, like the halls of a different colour in The Wizard of Oz.
And all the halls, the carpet keeps on changing.
Yeah, that has to keep happening.
And it's so bright and it's showing the beauty, the visceral, saturated nature of your life as a young 16-year-old gay boy working in Woolworths, meeting these men, having these amazing experiences.
I run away. I've had enough. And I've said again, you're not my real dad. And my dad says something like, well, if you don't like this dad, go and find your real one. And my mum says, don't tear this family apart. She said that before.
It's a recurring theme.
And my sister can't be bothered. She's like, oh, God. And she's put on some style council or something. And I run away.
And the music at this point?
Is there music? The going to London music.
Going to London music.
Oh, I know what. Just for lols, because it's such a stupid song. Let's listen to Beep Beep.
Beep Beep.
Beep Beep, which is by Tight Fit. It's the B-side to The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
This is a little clip of Beep
I have
Beep.
To, I have to hear it for a bit.
So that
okay, because
you're that, going
because
on a train,
that's because
maybe.
That's me calling home. They're not picking up, or they're trying to call me. But of course, there are no mobile phones, so they don't really know. We're trying to get in contact with me, but it's not working.
Okay,
I land up in Charing Cross.
You land up in Charing Cross.
Now we're in fantasy.
Bag.
Now we're in fantasy land. This didn't
and
happen.
This is something like, Wizard of Oz. You turn up, and everyone is in beautiful clothes.
Are they?
It seems, it could be. I don't know. I'm giving you ideas.
No, I think it's a bit rough to start off with.
I'm your young intern on the
I think it's a bit rough to start off with. Okay. It's realist, okay. Gritty. City buildings.
So there's no colour? Maybe
it's black and white. We've gone into black and white.
Like
The Wizard of Oz, yeah. We've gone actually into black and white. And it's really not what I thought it was going to be. I don't know if there's any music to go with this, actually.
We'll go to the next scene.
Look. Okay, the next scene is not very difficult because I think the next scene involves me kind of like finding a load of... I kind of like land up in Cardboard City.
Living in Cardboard City, feeling hungry, feeling... I had to sing that once for a school charity to raise money for the new hall. And then one year...
Did you get any money?
I can't remember. Then one year I had to do a striptease to... what's it called? Cabaret.
A striptease? What, a school?
At school, and we did it to raise money for the local chapel. And there were 15 of us. Well, it's because they got a new aerobics instructor and she said, I want to... Can I direct the new dance for the show, but she hadn't really spoken to any of the actual teachers about it, so she got five of us in corsets and miniskirts, and it was really quite sexually aggressive. Anyway, we actually brought in quite a lot of money that year, so
I don't know the sound of that. Cardboard City. We can have loads of different people cameoing now.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard. I'm like, I'm kind of regretting having left home.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. This is kind of like a sad, with this kind of a sad moment. I'm all alone. It's all very black and white. Walking along, thing is, I should befriend someone, shouldn't I? I should befriend some people.
Because at the moment, you know.
I feel like I need a plethora of cards. Leslie Manville, I think. Well, I need to befriend her, just gratuitously.
She comes in, she sees you, she goes, are you all right, love?
No, she goes, all right, love, how are you? She's chewing gum or something. Mm-hmm. All right, how are you? You look all on your own, aren't you? Why don't you come over here and hang out with us? And then there's loads and loads of other famous people. Name some.
Danny DeVito.
Yep,
he's there. Danny DeVito's there.
We've got to have Marlon Brando, absolutely.
Marlon Brando's just an old man.
No, young Marlon Brando.
Oh, young Marlon. Playing the drums? Good percussionist. It wasn't really used enough in cinema.
Some good strong... Meryl Streep, has she made an appearance yet?
You know what? Leave Meryl out.
Leave Meryl out. She doesn't deserve any more airtime. Brenda Bledon, of course. Mm-hmm. So they're all kind of homeless people living in Carpool City.
And maybe Keanu Reeves again, just because he complained that he didn't have enough of a big role.
Aren't you that security guard from Woolworths?
And he's like, no, that's my brother.
Oh,
I'm a plumber.
Perfect. And are the little, do the little kind of houses, the cardboard box houses that he was living in?
And what is the music playing at this
time? No, we're getting into this because they have, of course, this is my first foray into the world of drug taking.
Someone passes me
a spliff for the first time. There's only one song which it can be. Strawberry Fields.
You You are listening to Elf's Tuesday Takeover, and that is me. We are doing my dream film. So this is when I interview someone and tell them with an unlimited budget, they get to make the film of their choice, their dream film, the film that they always wanted to make and never were able to. We have the lovely Johnny Woo in the room.
Yes, I'm here.
His film is My Dad is an Elvis Presley Impersonator. So far, the cast includes Eddie Redmayne playing Johnny himself, yes. Alison Steadman playing Johnny's mum, Timothy Spall is Johnny's dad, Jennifer Lawrence is Johnny's sister, Lou Ferrigno is Johnny's lover, Keanu Reeves playing a multiple of cameo parts, and Leslie Manville, Marlon Brando, and Danny DeVito.
As kindly tramps.
As kindly
but
tramps.
But I'm just kind of thinking how the last song comes in, and Jimmy Mystery, mm-hmm. you know Jimmy Mystery, kind of like, I think he's like half Asian. Anyway, he was a friend of mine at when I was at university. Anyway, he is also one of these kind of like people who live in Kabul City. And he's given me this strange drug from wherever he's got it. It's probably just spliff. But I get stoned and it turns into Strawberry Fields, which is a bit Bollywood, as we suggested. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy kind of like is my portal into this weird kind of Bollywood fantasy there.
Yeah. Which also leads into, you know, hints about your life, Johnny, because you do a variety of different performances and performance styles.
Variety of different performance styles.
The Night at the Musicals, yes.
Unroyal Variety.
Your Unroyal Variety. Yeah. You know, you are a chameleon when it comes to performing in different genres.
Yeah, so I'm kind of... So I don't know what's happening. I've sort of kind of found myself and maybe now we are actively going into the zone of trying to find my real dad.
So this is, I suppose, in my head, this is the Billy Elliot moment when he meets his dance teacher and he's suddenly starting to learn about himself. You're in this cardboard city with these lovely characters.
Yes.
You've had this spliff.
Yes.
You've had this dream sequence to Strawberry Fields and you go, no, now actually the fun's happened. I've got a job to do.
Yes. Now we do the actual hunting of how am I going to find him?
Because you can't drive because there aren't any roundabouts in London.
I hadn't passed my test.
So you're having to walk everywhere. Maybe, you know, you're putting your thumbs out to jump in random cars.
Keanu Reeves
drives all of the cars because he's still insisting that
And he's a bit Matrixy.
Yeah.
He's a little bit, yeah, there's a little bit of the Matrix. So maybe we go back into this driving. So we go back to, and maybe I try, and this is, we can pull in this kind of weird thing as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is something I used to do in Birmingham. And when I got very drunk in Birmingham, this was a few years later, I used to go down Hurst Street and flag down cars and getting them and going shag men.
Wow.
So I think we go into that territory now.
And we go into that territory. It's not soliciting because
no,
there was
flagging
no, it was just
cars drunk and down. Once I got chased by the police.
We've lived such different lives.
But I think this kind of happens here.
I want this film to be commissioned. I really hope someone is listening. Maybe pass this on to Mike Lee.
Maybe weirdly, and I don't really want to go into this territory, but maybe there is some sort of weird seeking out sexual father figure.
I mean, it happens. It happens.
It's part of the gay narrative.
Who doesn't want to have sex with their dad? Ooh. Come on.
It's part of the gay narrative. And I used to kind of fancy Elvis Presley anyway.
Mm-hmm. Who doesn't? Look at him.
So I weirdly, yeah. And that picture of him on the G.I. Blues album was such a hottie. It's horrible when you got older.
Died on the toilet. That's my one useful fact.
And I think he shagged a 14-year-old, didn't he?
I mean, come on, anyone.
Priscilla Presley.
Anyone before 1980 seems to have shagged a teenager.
Or something? That one's not come out yet.
Allegedly. We need to say that he allegedly had sex with an underage person, just in case the.
How old was Priscilla Presley when they got together?
I don't know.
Just saying. Okay, anyway.
think about that, guys.
But anyway, but in this film, I'm obviously not that young. I'm actually over 16. And because I've already had kind of Lou Ferrigno. And now I think I've somehow kind of like maybe flagged down some car because I've become a bit of a prostitute. Become a prostitute.
No, you know what? I think maybe not... You're just sort of having a crazy time, and you maybe because you're young. You know that period of time when we all go around and we're sort of sexing it about, and we don't really.
How dare you?
No, but you were sexing about, and we're thinking, oh, I'm so sexual and so liberated. I'm like that person in all those films, but really, you're just very tired.
I'm very tired. I'm very sad, and I've kind of and I land up. I land up. On Shoreditch High Street.
You land up on
and
Shoreditch
walking,
High Street.
I'm walking. I'm walking alone up Shoreditch High Street to. Hot So Blue by Erasure.
Oh, Heart So Blue.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I'm left on my own. And we've got, and during this song, there are cutbacks to my mum and dad, and going, it goes a bit South Pacific in terms of how they used to just change colour. The whole screen used to go red mm-hmm. or blue or something. It's a bit like that. And we get cutbacks now to my mum making kind of like a cod and parsley sauce boil in the bag, maybe kind of colouring her, changing her hair colour. We go to my dad, who's kind of like all tinkering around in the shed at his lathe or something. And then we've got my sister. She doesn't care.
She's busy. She's got your job at Woolworths.
Lou Ferrigno is probably kind of like jacking off to pictures of me or something that he took on his Polaroid.
So again, this is sort of a series of different vignettes.
Absolutely. All set to Erasure's Heart So Blue. No. We don't have to play it all. Just, we can just have a little...
Just play a tiny clip there, but...
I didn't even hear it.
Do you want me to play it again?
Yeah, go on, I need to hear it.
Show for the listeners again. Just without Johnny's beautiful, sultry tones over the top. And just to clarify for anyone who was listening before, Priscilla was 21 when she married Elvis and he was 10 years older. So Elvis...
When
they got married.
I think they got together a little bit earlier than that.
Allegedly.
But I don't know. I might have made that up. Someone else told me that. Okay.
There's nothing like a rumour.
There's nothing like a rumour. I've said some terrible things on before on kind of radio and TV, so it doesn't really matter. I was wishing the Queen to be dead the other day, so it doesn't, you know, there goes my MBE. So, because I love a fabulous funeral. Anyway, so now
Elton,
I'm on Shoreditch High Street. I don't know how I've got there, but I know that on Shoreditch High Street there used to be an Elvis Presley impersonator store.
Mm-hmm.
They did, the memorabilia, Elvis Presley memorabilia store. And for some reason, I'm in it. For some reason, I've landed up in it. And then I noticed this kind of looks like a bit Elvis Presley. And he's playing all this Elvis Presley music. And I kind of, there's a bit of a family resemblance. It's played by me.
Played by real life, Johnny.
It's played by me. I'm actually playing, oh my God, the man who Eddie Redmayne is, me, is looking to be his dad. Oh my God, that's actually kind of like, so weird, isn't it?
But it's so poignant.
It's actually quite deeply poignant.
And also, it's a lovely little Easter egg for those watching the film. They go, wait a minute, that's Johnny Woo. The film that, you know, the book's based on. Like when M. Night Shyamalan appears in loads of his films. And or Hitchcock.
And for some reason, I get this, I have this kind of thing, I'm like, God, that's my dad. And I've actually found him and he's an Elvis Presley impersonator.
And how do you feel?
I don't know. But
and maybe the camera's very slow at this point, just looking on Eddie's face as he realises, is this what I want?
Studying the face. But I think maybe there's a picture of... I think the truth is also that he actually doesn't want anything to do with me.
No. Why not?
Because I think in real life as well, he didn't kind of keep in contact with us, and I think he wasn't a very nice person.
So we sort of see that slight hint
of
the darkness.
Yeah, this is the darkness of the Mike Leigh film coming out now. This is properly dark.
Like at the
sad.
End of a year when we see Leslie Manville's character is actually really dealing with alcoholism. We think it's just a cheerful
film. I love that.
Fun.
That's so good.
It's a beautiful, fun film about love at the beginning, and then you realise
it's all about Leslie Manville's alcoholism.
Yeah.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
It's a bit it's heartbreaking.
It's like in Fleabag when you realise that Fleabag's all about sex addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
You think, this is funny. And then, wait a minute.
She's just saying, you're like, oh, you're a sex addict. Well, that's how I read it mm-hmm. when I saw the play.
And it's like, also like the guinea pig. At the beginning, you watch it, guinea pigs are not lone animals. They have to have other partners, otherwise they die of loneliness. So in some ways, the fact she has this lone guinea pig in her shop is a symbol of the fact she's just looking for affection. She's looking for another partner.
Didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Some other layer. Okay, so we've gone to the real time. It's okay, we're looking, and I don't know how, maybe it's kind of quite, this is the moment in the film where everything kind of falls apart, as in Mike Leigh plays, everything's been fine and fun and all kind of wild, and then this is in real time, and Always On My Mind is a song I think we should play, but I think we should have probably chosen Jail House Rock or something, but Always On Your Mind will have to do.
Always On My Mind is beautiful because we can just watch you slowly walking home through Cardboard City and Leslie Manville says, are you okay?
But you know what I think of too? I think I walk all the way home to Kent.
Yeah.
I just keep walking.
So, listeners, imagine a young Eddie Redmayne.
It took an hour and a half on the train back in those days. So imagine how long that would take to walk.
About 15 hours.
At least.
At least. 15 hours at a light
to
jog.
To walk all the way.
To walk all the way to Kent.
All the way from Shoreditch High Street to who?
To who? In what year?
1980, bumfuck.
1980. So, you know, and that's also like, Shoreditch wasn't the nicest around then.
Yeah.
So just think about the dangers of a young 17-year-old
I'm doing this walk home, I have all these kind of weird kind of like flashbacks to all these times when I think about him. Then I think about my kind of like my dad, who is my dad. And then we kind of come to, I'm like, oh my God, like, and it all becomes very Wizard of Oz. And it's like, there's no place like home. Always on my mind is playing.
Maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. Maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. You were always on my mind. Maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times. And I guess I never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm so sorry I was blind.
Song fades out, we watch young Johnny come through the door dilapidated and tired.
Absolutely dilapidated, because I've walked all the way from London to Kent, which has taken me forever. I feel terrible. I look awful.
And it's probably 6:30 in the morning. It's a really weird time that you've come home.
Something like that. And there's kind of the music still playing, and kind of like everyone rushes out, and kind of like because it's England, because it's Medway, because it's the 80s, nobody's really that affectionate. And it's been like, oh, where have you been? Even though I've been gone like 3 months or something. something weird like that. And everyone's crying. I'm like, oh, and realising or something. And so that's the moment when it's all kind of really sad. And my dad says, where have you been? And I'm like, oh, I just popped that one out. And I don't tell him.
There always seems to be a moment in those films where suddenly someone will just suddenly talk about something completely. It seems so benign, like someone related going, what I find interesting about tulips is, and then they'll talk about tulips for 2 minutes.
My dad has totally just done that.
It's completely poignant.
Yeah.
And it's something actually that's saying a lot more about their own relationships and steam. Maybe he's talking about the birds and the way they migrate.
No, I think he's just laid a gravel path.
He's laid a gravel path.
And I'm like, oh, what's that crunchy on this foot? Oh, that's the gravel path. Oh. So anyway, so that's... So for a minute, there's like high emotion and I'm just dilapidated. My sister's kind of like, oh, hello. All right, Jonathan, where you been? That's all she says.
That's Jennifer Lawrence.
That's Jennifer Lawrence. And Mum,
she's really
Alice
had
Stedman.
A very minimal role.
Yeah, she comes back now. She's a big guy. She has a big bit now. And there might have been loads of people I met on the way down. Meryl Streep. I think I keep bumping into people. She's in it.
And Keanu Reeves. He's now going out with your sister.
He kept being different. Yes.
And they're moving in together.
Local drug dealer. Yeah.
Him and Jennifer Lawrence. Maybe Jennifer's pregnant. Your sister.
Yes.
You come back and you're like, wait. Something feels weird. You hug her and then you realise she's got a bump.
I've only been gone 3 months.
Well, you know, first the trimester.
The time frame's gone all a bit weird. It's just that Elvis Presley always in my mind. Everyone just tripped out.
Tripped yeah, maybe out, it walking took home, you a month
thinking,
to walk
lots
home.
Of flashbacks, Woolworths, Olivia Colman, all these kind of people were in it. Okay, but at the end, we come to the end of the film, a big scene, gone back to normal. I am kind of like, me and my sister, I'm like, oh, listen, my sister's like, Mum's like, oh, Eurovision's on. And of course, that's my favourite thing ever, even though we didn't allude to that in the film, but it doesn't matter. And then I'm going to watch Eurovision. And so Eurovision's on, and I'm going to, I often act out songs that I think should be in Eurovision, even though it's not of the time. So we are going to play that song in just a second. But as the kind of the little thing, just to kind of think, make everyone think, oh, we've all moved on and everything's fine. My dad just comes in and goes, oh, do you want a driving lesson? And I'm like, no, I think I'm all right, Dad. And he goes, well, I've just got you this phone number for a driving school. And I'm like, thanks, Dad. Come watching Eurovision. And he goes, all right. And then you can hear him walking on his gravel path. And then I'm like to my sister, okay, right, this is the routine. And even though it's not in Eurovision and it's not from the time, I think it'd be really good as a Eurovision song.
And we're just about to play that in 1 second. But before we do, Johnny.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you'd like to promote to the listeners? Do you have any social media?
Johnny was all-star Brexit cabaret at the Soho Theatre from the last week in May and the first week in June.
Go and see that, guys.
Yeah, that's on.
Come and see this. And
anything at the Glory. Anything at the Glory.
Come see the Glory, which is just one of the most important places in London, really.
And me and Gatto are in Norwich and Brighton doing musicals this week.
So go and find Johnny Wu. Give
all
him,
over
you
the
know,
place.
If anyone knows Mike Lee, obviously tell him about
tell
this
him about
film.
That. If anyone knows where Peter Hook is, the first man I ever shagged, so I'm just interested to see him again.
So on that note, in the callback to the opening shots of the film where you and your sister dance to Shout to the Top, the Star Council, this time you, the adult, the one in charge, you teach your sister the dance routine to the Eurostar winning.
But what happens is Eddie Redmayne, Endymama, eating Endymama beans maybe, doing the dance routine to my sister, but then it goes into the TV screen and it's actually me as Kylie Minogue performing All the Lovers, winning Eurovision for the UK.
Dance. It's all I wanna do, so won't you dance? I'm standing here with you, why won't you move? I'll get inside your groove, cause I'm on fire, 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 fire. It hurts when you get too close, but baby, it hurts. If love is really good, you just want more. Even if it throws you to the fire. all I wanna do, so won't you dance? I'm standing here with you, why won't you move? Even if it throws you to the fire, 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 fire.
We are joined now by Caroline Sheen. Hello, Caroline. Well, can I talk about 9 to 5, the musical? No, I was watching that Dolly Parton was there, and there was a big reveal of her on the stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She just felt exciting, even though I don't know much about Dolly Parton and that. Yeah. I still felt the excitement of that.
She's an absolute legend. I mean, that woman, she came over for like 3 or 4 days to promote the show.
Yeah.
And then the next day was our opening night, and she came on stage and spoke to everyone. And then she came off in the wings with the three of us girls, and she wasn't with her like security people. And so she could speak really freely to us, and she was so lovely and
she was
supportive.
Just real.
And she was like, I want to come see it again, but without all these people.
Every Monday,
Ian Boltworth
from 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Elf Lyons on FUBAR Radio.
Hello again, it's Elf. Had a really quick toilet break, and we've got the lovely Phil Elias. So if you're just tuning in now, this is my Tuesday takeover, so I'm in charge more, ha 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 ha. And basically we are doing you know, Desert Island Discs, but imagine if you got to do that with cinema, because they say everyone's got one great book in them, but I think everyone's got one dream film. I think if everybody had the opportunity and the funds to make a film, they could, and they do a fantastic job, because let's be fair, there are some films that we see at the cinema and we go, why has that been put on? So I'm interviewing some of the most interesting and inspirational people I know and asking them that if they had an unlimited budget, what film would they make? And in front of me, I have the lovely Phil Ellis. He's sort of a long, beautiful, Roald Dahl-esque creature of comedic revelry and unique talents, I'm going to say.
Means unbookable.
Unbuckable. I'm just going to put a beautiful song that really reminds me of you on in the background
really?
As we talk a bit more. Have you ever... Are you a fan of Alfred Hitchcock?
I certainly am.
This is one of his famous background tracks.
Yeah, is it Psycho?
It is Psycho.
Thank you. Cheers.
No, it's a compliment.
No, it's good. That's what I have on my CV.
How have you been, Phil?
I've been very sad. I'm joking. I'm all right, I think. Just travelled down from the north.
From the north?
From the north, yeah.
Manchester?
I had to go and guard the wall. Preston.
Was it fun? Did you have a lovely time?
You'll never have a good time in Preston, although we don't have the biggest bus station in Europe. You're welcome.
Well, this hopefully will be more joyful than your time in Preston.
Wonderful.
For the listeners who've never met you before, what is a skill of yours that you never get to tell people about that you're really, really impressed and proud of?
Ghosting. No, I'm joking. very good at... Well, skill? Well, this is... I think the problem with being a comedian is you have no transferable skills. So there's
really?
Nothing that would be particularly useful in life. But, you know... Let me think. Oh, I didn't know this.
Oh, well, you know,
I don't think I have any skills.
You do have some skills. No, I will say for Phil, when I was in hospital in October when I wasn't very well, Phil came and visited me and tried with so much enthusiasm, but not much success of trying to get morphine off the nurses.
That's the only reason I went, in all honesty. I've been waiting for that for ages.
Yeah, and hydrocodone, which again, she wasn't keen on. But then she said she found out we were comedians and asked if we could recommend any good comedy nights. Which she subsequently never came to, so...
Yeah, well, there's loads as well, guys. Get out there and support live comedy.
Is there any that you really want to big up at the moment? Any shows that you're doing?
That I'm doing?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. I've just done a run of 5 gigs in a row, so I'm a bit... don't know what gigs. London wise, obviously. All over. Frog and Bucket's my favourite.
Phil's just happy to get out of the house, aren't you? Just happy to put some headphones on, have a cup of tea. He's brought me a chocolate bar, dairy milk. Yeah. You just want to talk about some sweet, sweet music.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, yeah, because comedy doesn't define me as a person.
What?
No.
You're not just a comedian.
I'm more about my music. Been working on that in my shed.
You're working on your little album.
Mm.
Your jazz
album. I don't even
album.
Have a shed. Don't know why I said that. I used to have a shed, but...
So if you had to... If there was a film about your life, who do you think would play you?
Mariella Frostrop.
You said that with so much conviction. You've clearly thought about this.
And you know what? I can't even picture what she looks like. It's just a good name, isn't it?
It is a beautiful name. And she'd play you in drag?
No. As she is.
As she is.
Is she alive? Why don't you text in? Let us know if Mariella Frostrop's still alive. And also, who is she? Because the name just came to me. Can't for the life of me think of the hell she is.
Well, the beautiful thing about your film, Phil, which you're about to take us through, is that because of your budget, there is so much money for this. Any actors who are currently passed away, we can chirogenically, using science, bring them back from the grave.
Hey, stop all this technical jargon.
So if you want James Stewart to be in it, he can be. If you want Alfred Hitchcock to, you know, just have a tiny cameo, he can be. We've got a picture of
there's Mariella.
Mariella.
She
looks like everyone's friend's mum. Like the one that always has the nicest food in the lunchbox.
She was really cool. Like in the 90s, she was a very cool kind of... A Norwegian, Scottish journalist and presenter, known in British television and radio mainly for arts programmes. She had a very nice little kind of frosty.
So no one
voice
better really to
play me.
Play you. I would. I feel maybe.
Who do you think would play me?
I want to say Egon Schiele, but I know he's not an actor. But I think it's just because you look like one of his paintings.
Oh God.
/ Lemony Snicket, and I say this with
everyone,
love.
Yes, everyone says the Jim Carrey. He's not called Lemony Snicket, is he? But it's Baron something.
Uncle Fest. No, it's not Uncle Fest.
But basically, I'm a balding man. Okay, for the listeners, I'm a receding man.
You're not a balding man. You're pointed. You're sort of Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, there's a picture.
You were the Pumpkin King. That's who you are.
I am a bit. Yeah,
but in
I'm
a leather
jangly.
Jacket. And a big fan of the Megabus. But anyway, we need to crack on with this film.
Sorry.
So, don't apologise. Safe
you.
Space.
You're the first person to tell me never to apologise.
Never to apologise. Be proud of
Thank
who you are.
Thank you for not fencing me an elf.
So, you sent me your soundtrack, which I have listened to repeatedly, and I absolutely love it. It also made me feel very depressed.
Yeah.
Which I think, again, shows the power of music.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about this film. What is this film about?
This film is about one man's journey through love, loss, credit card bills, and his dream of becoming the Northwest's greatest whittler.
Whittler? What's a whittler?
It's when you just sort of whittle wood with a knife.
So it's about small goals, but, you know, big journeys. In some ways, is it again, Johnny was talking about Mike Leigh. Are you a big Mike Leigh fan?
Massive Mike Leigh fan, probably my favourite of all the directors, yeah.
What's your favourite film of his?
I think to be honest, Elf, there's too many to mention, but Mean Time is one of my favourites, which was an early, I think, 1983 TV film with Gary Oldman in it, Tim Roth, Alfred Molina. It's wonderful. I mean, it's grim as hell, but, you know, isn't life.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't always have to be jolly, jolly, jolly.
Exactly. But
it's about when it resonates, because we all struggle.
We do struggle, and it's Mental Health Awareness Week, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's about small achievements as well. You know, sometimes just small things, as I always find with his films as well, when you watch them, it's about the everyday life.
Yes.
And just, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. Exactly. Are you a big fan of Ken Loach or Shane Meadows?
I do like
Meadows?
Ken Loach, but Shane Meadows as well. They're brilliant. Okay, I'm not going to... And Ken Loach is brilliant, okay, but with Shane Meadows, right, I get it that you're trying to get real people in your films, but I'd much rather see a good actor. I don't want to see some bloke who's got the Nottingham accent trifling around because you saw him on doing a wheelie once on an estate. Can't act, mate. They're rubbish. They're really...
He discovered Paddy Considine in a room for Romeo and Brass, so for me, Shane will always be top dog.
Yeah, well, I know, if you stick your fucking hand in enough use needles, you're going to find one with the virus. Listen, don't know what that meant. I'm sorry. I couldn't think of a good analogy.
But I think maybe it's a line from the film that we'll come back later.
Yeah.
So is this in the style of a kitchen sink drama? Is this gritty realism? Is this a one-hand camera type of thing?
Yeah.
Is this a big cast and big crew? Who are the stars? Who is the lead actor?
Okay, well, my lead actor is going to be Anthony Newley.
Anthony Newley, fantastic. And what's the name of the character he's playing?
Old Pip.
Old Pip. And Old Pip is Old Pip, the man that he wants to become the whittler.
Yes.
Okay. Did you do any thought process about this radio show when I emailed you a month ago?
Not going to lie to you, Elf, done no work on this.
Okay, well, that's absolutely fine. We're a team.
But I reckon we're going to get through it.
Anthony Newley is Old Pip.
And he basically plays me.
Okay.
Mariella's been dropped.
Okay, Mariella, she's busy. You know, like, sure, she's the budget is unlimited for this, but she's got an arts programme to do.
Yeah, I get her as a runner.
Yeah, she'll come in, maybe as an intern.
Yeah.
Cameo role at some point. Her choice. Maybe she does the voiceover. Maybe there's a narrative.
She could do.
Maybe the voice, you know, telling us in the first scene.
I mean, I'm going to be creaming most of the money off the top. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, on just my life, so.
It's good to know that you're just in it for the art.
Yeah, of course I am. I mean, I'm definitely not in comedy for the money because I'm skint.
So what is the opening shot? You've sent me your first track for the film.
Yes.
Which is the absolutely cult atmosphere by Joy Division, if I'm correct. And what is happening when we've got a small clip of this beautiful song, if you've not heard it, do. But what happens in this part of the film?
Shall I explain it over the top?
No, would you tell us? And then we'll
As the music plays, we see the biggest bus station in Europe in Preston with its beautiful concrete contours and things, and it rises above all the way up the bus station to the top where Old Pip is stood, arms outstretched with all of Preston ahead of him. There's a big B&M Bargains in front of it, so that's like probably the first shop you'll see, and he stood there as if he's going to jump, and he goes "Aah!" That's the open.
So we think it's going to be a suicide shot.
We think so. But it turns out, because you can't see the front, he's actually got a fishing rod in his other hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he's stealing people's wallets.
He's stealing people. So it's a beautiful pullback and reveal. We think what we're going to have is a really gritty, dark drama, British drama. And actually, there's a comedy. There's light to it.
There is. And he's got his knob out. don't see that from the back.
You don't see that. Is that an Easter egg for the viewers? Or is this one of those things that the actor does?
I think the actor
does. It's not actually put in the shot. And then when you go on IMDb, it tells you the random facts about the making of the film. It says, oh, did you know that Anthony Newley refused to put his genitals away throughout the whole shooting of the film?
Exactly. I think we could do with the old Pip in his pants in this scene, but he's like, no, so we have to like place of ours in the way.
Because he's method, and this is the only way he really gets to become one with the role.
Exactly. Well, he knew that old Pip was that kind of guy, so he's just, you know.
And what happens in the next scene?
Well, he gets a bus.
Mm-hmm. Where does the bus go to?
Well, I mean, if you're going to get a bus from the biggest bus station in Europe, my God, your choices are vast. You can go anywhere, really.
So where would he go?
Manchester.
Manchester. Now, and traditionally, most films there is a quest. You know, there's a sort of a five act, you know, or three act, depending whether it's a heist, a romance, etc. So, Old Pip, he wants to become a weaver,
a whittler. I might change that because it's really limiting the plot. Isn't it?
Why not? It's your film.
He wants to open.
All Ariel wanted to do is just have legs and walk on land, and look how successful that went.
Well, do you know what? I get told a lot, actually, if I'm writing anything. I keep getting told there's not enough jeopardy in it. What's the jeopardy? What does Phil want?
How about Old Pip's been told he's going to die?
Ooh.
Is that too dark?
Maybe. But I hear you, like a doctor or just someone in a booth in Blackpool.
The voice... No, maybe someone in Blackpool. He goes into one of those tarot card reading shops.
Oh, yeah.
or into a confession booth and he thinks he's chatting to a priest and actually it's some drunk man who's snuck in and he tells him, you are going
your
to die.
Your film sounds a lot better than mine.
No,
just a bloke with a stick.
Look, I'm just the assistant dramaturg. Occasionally I'm going to come in and give you a few little tips, you know, that's all I can do.
I've got it. Right, forget Whitlin. Okay. It's the 90s, isn't it? Britpop's at its height.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Cox drinks pints. It's the mid-90s.
It's not just the 90s, it's the mid-90s.
Exactly.
The absolute ultimate 90s.
Old Pip, played by a Cockney, is going to go to Manchester to become the greatest scratch master. Become the greatest band ever and find a wife. There you go.
Find a wife and become the greatest band ever. So he's fed up of his time in Preston. He's fed up of just sitting on the top of this bus stop trying to fish other people's wallets.
He wouldn't be.
And so he puts on his favourite track.
Yeah.
He gets on the bus and he goes, I am going to Manchester. And he's got his lute in his back. He's got his ukulele. He's got his drums.
He's got a pie.
He's got his pie. He's got everything he needs.
He's got a dog. He doesn't know who it is.
He stole it with the fishing rod. He's got old Pip. It's a slightly surrealist film. It's becoming more like Delicatessen now, I feel.
Oh, it's kooky, isn't it?
It's kooky. It's a bit like Amelie.
All the characters
slightly heightened. And what track does he put on as he puts on his cassette player?
He puts on Listen Up by Oasis.
Which we will put on now. Enjoy.
Listen.
And that was Listen Up by Oasis. So
I did that, sorry.
That's how everyone's going to feel watching the film, eating their popcorn. Anthony Newley plays old Pip slash Phil on his way to Manchester to find himself a wife. Phil, for those who don't know who Anthony Newley is, do you know anything about him?
Anthony Newley was an amazing singer-songwriter who a lot of people suggest, because David Bowie was a big fan, that Bowie took his singing voice from Anthony Newley, because he's like, it's a bit like that. And he was brilliant. He wrote the soundtrack to Willy Wonka, the Gene Wilder film. He wrote the song Fever. Fever!
Such a seductive song.
Thank you.
Especially
I didn't write
when
it.
You sing it.
Well, yeah, kiss me. So he wrote Fever. He was married to Joan Collins. That's an achievement. I love Joan Collins, you know. She's the reason I wear sun cream in winter.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Because I can tell. You've got skin so pure and.
Do you know what? I think if
fresh.
It wasn't for the borderline alcoholism, I'd have perfect skin.
I believe that too.
Thanks.
About the borderline alcoholism.
Oh yeah, it's more burst capillaries on my face than.
Didn't he also,
John
Anthony? He played the. Did he play the Artful Dodger in one of the Twist?
I didn't know that. I don't think in the 60s one. I think in the black and white, the early, if there was an earlier one.
Possibly.
I don't think it was that one.
It
or maybe
seems
it was
like the type of film that would be done multiple times.
1948, yes. That
1948,
would be the one.
Yes, he did.
And he had a sitcom, 1960, called The Strange World of Gurney Slade, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It got cancelled after like two episodes, but they had to play out the other six. So by episode four, there's an episode where he's actually defending the sitcom in court with the public. And just telling them all that they're idiots and they don't understand, because it's so weird and different to anything else that had ever come out. And the very last shot is him looking at a poster of it, just saying, well, it turns out the audiences didn't want something different, they just want the same old thing over and over again. It's really quite ahead of its time.
Perhaps that's something that we can pay reference to in your film.
I think so. I think
The fact you've got Anthony Nero cryogenically brought back from death to play...
Exactly.
A young... How old is Pip in this film?
Three.
Phil?
All right, he's 16.
He's 16, okay.
So there might be a sex scene later, so it's fine.
Yeah, if he's three,
I didn't want to say 15 in case, you know. Yeah.
He's six, and also he's got his knob out for the entire...
He's got his knob out a lot, yeah.
So we don't want to make it one of those films. So he's 16, he arrives in Manchester. What happens next?
Well, he's instantly mugged.
Instantly mugged.
Yeah,
everything's
taken
from him.
The rod, the dog...
The dog's gone as
dog's
well.
Dog's gone.
So he's on his own. So it's like you're setting the audience up with this one idea of what's going to happen, and then you're pulling it back from going, no.
I am, yes.
The narrative you thought was going to happen, this isn't that type of film.
I like it. Look at this plot as if like it's a comedy gig of mine. Like, I go on and people expect comedy, and I do not give them that.
And what actually happens is you attempt to hang yourself like once you once famously tried to do.
Yes, and I did actually hang myself yesterday by mistake. I poured a glass of wine over a man's head last night. It was really annoying me. But the thing is, let's get back on track to the film.
The good thing about this show is you don't just learn about cinema, but you also learn about the inner mental states of the guests.
Yes,
and that's
yes.
what we want. We want an extra little bit of connection between the listener and the interviewee.
I'm very...
Interviewee? Interviewer?
Yes.
You. Between you and Phil. Phil?
Yes.
The inner you and the listener.
I'm only closed emotionally to the ones I love. But to strangers over the radio, I'll give you everything. So whatever you
want
to know.
That's what we want at FUBA.
Why don't you text in? Ask me a question.
Ask if you've got any
really
questions
personal.
For Phil. You know, what medications he's on? How many units of alcohol does he drink a week? You know, what's his favourite Oasis song? You just let us know. So anyway, he gets mugged.
He gets mugged right off the bat. So he's got nothing. But he walks down the road and he sees a bar, and it's free to get in, right? He finds a pound on the floor. In Manchester, that's enough for a pint and a house, actually. So he goes into the pub and there's a live act on, there's a singer, and he orders his half a pint, because he probably can't get a pint for a quid. He orders half a pint.
And he's 16 as well. His liver's, you know, young and innocent. He's not going to be able to handle a pint.
Well, exactly. But, you know, in Preston, you could drink from 14 when I was, you know.
Okay.
I mean, not legally, but no one really cared.
Yeah.
You know, kind of legends we were. So he's in the pub and he buys a half and he looks across the smoky, because you could smoke indoors then, looks across the smoky bar and sees the most beautiful woman he's ever seen in his life. And this song plays. Sorry.
I apologise for your beautiful singing voice.
I used
and he
to
looks
sing
in
that.
Turn, he falls madly in love.
Falls madly in love with her.
And which actress is playing this girl?
Mariella Fostrom.
Come on now, she can't play both of you.
It'll be Joan Collins.
It'll be Joan Collins.
Yeah.
A young Joan Collins. Oh, now.
Yeah.
Joan Collins is playing.
Pip likes the older lady.
A young 16-year-old looks at Joan Collins from 2019.
Yep.
How old is she in 2019, Phil?
Well, I'd say she's ageless.
Perfect. She's sort of an enigma, like being Barbarella, like a Joan Fonda. Jane Fonda in Barbarella.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. Yeah, like that.
You look That's at Jane amazing. Fonda now and you still think of Barbarella and you go, you are the most sexy woman in the world.
She's still a very sexy woman.
She's phenomenal.
Wonderful.
I actually did a GCSE art piece where I made a giant, like huge painting of her.
You've still got it?
I do, and I...
Can I have it?
I really do. Of course you can. Thanks. For your payment for this show.
Brilliant. I'll have to laminate it. So, that song plays. I used to sing Be My Baby to my ex mm-hmm. when she... Because I used to work night shifts a lot in the airbags factory. Because I've always been a winner.
Yeah.
And then sometimes she would go to bed, and only sometimes... And I'd sing that to her and stroke her hair until she went to sleep. And then I'd go downstairs and, watch a DVD or something. And then,
like this sort of
so it means a lot
hints
to me, that
towards
song.
What happens maybe with you and Joan Collins or Pip and Joan Collins. Does he make a move in this scene?
He does like the typical thing that you do in the playground. Like, you know, when you fancy someone but you don't really want to tell them. So you tease them.
Yeah.
So he chucks a glass at her.
After he's finished his half pint.
Because he thinks, well, I'm going to go the opposite way. I don't want her to know I like her.
Yeah.
So he attempts to glass her from a distance.
And, okay.
And the glass smashes behind her. She goes, and do you know what? She respects him for it. She sees...
She looks at him and says, you're going to have to aim better than that if you want to get my attention.
Oh, my God, yeah, that's brilliant.
So I'm like,
get me the horn a bit.
She looks at him and she finishes her double wine, puts it down on the table and she
double
goes, this
wine.
Is how you throw a beer. And then she gets the beer and she just throws it and it hits the centre point of the dartboard, smashes.
Yeah.
She goes, come with me, kid. I'll show you a good time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She goes, you cut that throwing glasses? Yeah, does that you said that was brilliant. And then, and then she goes, I live in the flat upstairs. She's from somewhere.
I live in the flat upstairs.
And I go, Pip goes, yeah, I haven't got anywhere to live. Blah, blah, blah.
What's a young boy like you doing in a bad place like this?
Exactly, yeah,
Manchester's a bad place for a young boy like you with just a fishing rod on your back.
And she takes him upstairs and she uses him like a second-hand Lilo. Rips him apart. Yeah.
And what song is playing during that?
Well, there's nothing playing during the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
As she's finishing another packet of Rothmans,
mm-hmm.
she's smoking by the window.
She's there in a dressing gown. Yeah. He expects maybe that because he's young and naive that this is true love.
Exactly. And he wakes up and he looks down at his penis is out actually for the rightfully at this point. Thank God, Anthony. He actually fits the scene. In fact, it's the one time he sheathes it. And Joan's in the window smoking. She goes, oh, I thought you'd never wake up. And he goes, oh, I've woken up in more ways than one, if you know what I mean. I've got an erection. And he ruins like the whole, trying to be subtle.
Because he's 16, he thinks it's funny, he doesn't really understand.
Yeah, and he's put like a pair of glasses on the end and goes, oh, look, it's a face. And then she goes...
Which, pays homage again to the opening beginning of him stealing people's stuff with his fishing rod. He's a slight eccentric.
He's a
cheeky chap.
You don't see enough of them anymore with a thumbs up.
Anyway.
Sorry, it's enough about the penises. So, there he is. And she goes, I don't need no boy.
I want a man.
I want a man.
You need to learn how to become one before you can call me back.
Yeah, you want to stay with Roxy? You got to learn how to be a man. No, and then she, like, just turns away and he goes, but, and then she just, like, kicks him out. So now he's out on the streets, heartbroken. And then this someplace...
I've given you all of my heart, but there's someone who's torn it apart, and he's taken almost all that I've got. But if you wanna try to love again, baby, try to love again.
The First Cut Is the Deepest by P.P. Arnold, and this is in the film, the dream film made by Phil Ellis. Yeah. So far in your beautiful sort of, as it were, eccentric surrealist kitchen sink drama, there are only two characters, old Pip slash, you know, truly the inner life of Phil Ellis, played by Anthony Newley, who in this stage of the film, he is 16 years old, and the love interest is Joan Collins, but in her the age she is now... 85 years old.
Yeah.
So far what we've seen is old Phil, old Pip, has, despite the fact he's only 16, but his nickname is Old, which suggests that though he may be young, he's seen a lot for a young boy on the streets. Yep. He's escaped to Manchester to form a band, find true love, and he thinks he's seen that with Joan Collins.
Yeah, but she wants him to go away and become a man.
Become a man. And she's also nameless, her character. Is there a name for Joan
Roxy.
Collins? Roxy.
Yeah.
So old Pip is in love with Roxy, who's taken his heart.
Yes, yes, yes.
And he's on the streets. And what happens next?
So he's wandering around Manchester. And he's got nothing to do. And he's a bit, oh, God, he's got no money. And then he sits on a bench in Piccadilly Gardens before it was done up.
So what was it like then for those who went there in 1995?
There were more trees and a lot more... bad people.
Bad people.
In the park.
Muggers, drug addicts, not saying drug addicts are bad people, but you know.
No, they're not bad.
So the place you would want to be as a little 16-year-old boy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's sat on this bench and he's a bit sad. And then he notices that someone's thrown quite a large part of a sausage roll for a pigeon. So then he goes, well, I'm hungry. Why is that pigeon having half a sausage mm-hmm. roll? So he goes and starts wrestling with his pigeon to get the sausage roll.
Which is also, I suppose, quite a funny, you know, sequence of events. A beautiful shot.
Yes.
It becomes quite cult later on when the film starts getting reviewed and shown at Cannes. This is the scene that they use for the teaser.
Exactly. Finally, a pigeon scene that reflects my life, you know.
Because we've all had to wrestle with an animal for food.
And it's a metaphor.
For life.
Yes.
For your state, for your relationship with the comedy industry.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I don't know if I'm the pigeon or the sausage roll in that. But, and then this bloke just comes out of the bushes and goes, all right, you off? See, you're a fan of sausage rolls. I've got one in this hedge. Do you want a full one? And old Pip's a bit like, yeah, all right then. And he goes in, but then realises the guy's a really big band promoter. And he genuinely does have a sausage roll. He's not luring him in as a...
So it's almost a bit... What you've done here is you've subconsciously remade Great Expectations.
Probably.
But in a mid-90s Britpop way. And that this man, who he thinks is going to be the enemy, he's going to be dodgy, is actually going to become a great millionaire who's going to give him his fortune.
Exactly. And he's called Pip. So this guy's like...
Why has he been in the bush all day, old Pip? Is he not a bit confused? Like, mate, I thought you were going to be weird and you were in the bush. And the guy's like, look, I've got an issue with drinking.
No.
I had a big night with a band.
Yeah, no, he's like, yeah, I'm more into my music, but on the weekdays I like to do amateur botany. He's an amateur botanist.
And he makes gin.
He makes gin. and he has a band, so he goes, I like your look, kid. And then he just takes him to a place and puts him in a band.
And during this, maybe, is this a montage sequence, perhaps?
Yeah.
I'm really glad that you did so much research for this.
It's a montage.
When I said, Phil, I could have asked anyone to come and be a guest. I only get to have two guests in.
Hey.
I've picked you and Johnny Woo. I really look up to you, Phil. I know that you've put so much time into your work.
Yes.
You're always so well laundered.
Thank
you're
you.
So efficient with all the mega buses you pre-book for your gigs. Yeah. I know that you, and also you were so adamant about the tracks you wanted for this.
Very on the ball
with the tracks.
Yes.
But very off pieced when it comes to the narrative arc, which is why during this montage...
It's ironic because I'm very pieced. I'm joking, I'm not. Actually.
He's not. He's just drinking tea and he's pretty much demolished all the Rocky Road. But during Oh, no, that was me. Right. But during this sequence, this montage, this track is played.
Yes.
Crying never did nobody no good, no how. That's why I don't cry. That's why I don't cry.
And that was Crying, Laughing, Loving by Crying, Loving, Laughing, Lying from Les Bicifres. I think I've said that correctly. And so at
beautiful
that moment,
song.
So, which is sort of more slow and tender for this montage. So he's maybe finding a community.
I think so. I mean, this song, I'll tell you why I chose this song, actually, Alf, if you don't mind me going slightly off topic of this award-winning
film. You know, this is what this is about, Phil.
Well, you see, I had a very brief period of having money a few years ago. And with that, I rented a flat in Manchester, which was my dream flat that looked out over the city and the canals. I once saw a man at 1:30 a.m. walk up, because all the geese used to sleep outside, Canadian geese. He was sort of hanging around. It's about 1:30. Now, you don't go there unless you live there, because there's nothing else. You have to actually purposely go onto this little bit to get there. So he'd come out at 1:30 in the morning with the sole purpose of doing what he did, which was he stood, looked around, then kicked a goose into the canal. Well, what happens in your life that you feel the need to find a goose to kick?
I was saying that my ex-boyfriend had a phobia of geese, like an acute phobia of geese. And every time he'd walk into a park where there was geese, he'd make me walk in front of him because he thought if the geese attacked, I would be the first that they would go for. In hindsight, I should have realised there that the relationship was never going to work. But at the time, I thought it was a really cute little, you know, quirk of his. And now every time that when I start dating people now, I'm like, what phobias do you have?
Interesting. Well, do you know what you should do is always do a first date near a goose, and you can weigh them up then.
Or just
you?
A flock of geese, or maybe just in the middle of a safari, and just see how they react.
Exactly, but you see, you won't get all the fit. I'm scared of sauce, so I mean that
sauce, like tomato sauce.
Yes, I have a fear of sauce. So. Phil, no Pip.
Who is playing the nameless sausage roll botanist music manager?
Mel Gibson, everyone's favourite mad racist.
Is it Mel Gibson?
No, I can't work with him.
You couldn't work with this film. Is an impossible film to. I mean, you've spent most of the budget.
You said I could do what I wanted.
You can do what you want, but I mean, you spent
bloody Mel Gibson in.
I mean, but Mel Gibson, you're going to really have to invest in PR to publicise this film to get people to come see it.
And he's doing it with a Chinese accent.
Now,
right, fine, okay, right, I'll change that.
You can't, for the listeners, you can't see my expression, but right now I look very, I'm trying to pull my best Maggie Smith slash Trunchbull.
If I want to make this awful film, no, I'm joking.
If you want to make it a terrible film, you can by all means.
Okay, right, okay, it's not Mel Gibson. Why don't you tweet in with a suggestion for who could play? What about Dave Dickinson?
Dave Dickinson, okay.
From Bargain Hunt.
Okay. I mean, it does, I suppose it makes sense. What I really like about this film is you've not gone for the traditional. You've not picked, you know, the big... Yeah. You've not gone for Olivia Colman. You've not gone for the Rachel Weisz. You've not gone for recent Oscar winners. Yeah. You have gone for, I mean, sort of golden oldies.
Well, I mean, thanks for noticing that, actually, because I did spend a lot of time thinking about this. And
one of the motifs of the film.
Yes, and I just think it's very good to give, because I don't like ageism in the entertainment business, which is a real problem, I think.
Let's talk about the big issues.
Yeah, well, I think we should. I don't think it's, and I think particularly for females, I think it's there's a prejudice there toward using younger actresses, in particular, and I think it needs to stop.
Yeah, we need to cast only old actors, which I think is quite right. There aren't enough films that are made predominantly about characters over their 50s, over their 60s. There has been in the last few years, but I feel like they're all sort of cheesy. They don't really... People seem to think the moment you hit 50, you're old, which is so not... I remember once having to act in a play at university, and I was playing the mother... It was Festin, one of the... dark film and play, and I was playing the mother, and I remember the director turning to me going, well, remember, she's in her late 40s, so she probably not got her hips, she's probably had an operation, she probably doesn't, you know, she's going to be quite dowdy. And I was thinking, most of my friends' mums slash comics I know are in their late 40s and are incredibly fashionable, incredibly healthy. What is this weird attitude we've got towards age?
Strange. My mum and dad are... My dad's 78, my mum's 69, and they're still quite weird. Not cool, but, you know, they don't dress like little... My mum hates old people, actually, weirdly. It's the irony, but... She
kicks them like geese.
Yeah, yeah. But she doesn't want... You know, she doesn't want to be that looked at, you know, as an old person.
You forget, you know. Like, people, you know... Like, people who are older than my parents, they were around during the punk era, you know, swinging 60s to the 70s. All, you know, they were the cool generation, the innovators of that time for a lot of the music that me and a lot of my friends listen to.
I think everyone at home, if you're listening, I mean, maybe not at home, maybe you're on the move, just remember that your mum and dad are perverts. Don't forget that. They've done some filthy stuff to each other. Never forget that. Don't judge them.
And so with that, going back to the film, so pervert. David Dickinson is playing the band manager.
Yes.
Crying, laughing, loving, lying, he has introduced old Pip into the world, maybe taught him an interest, you know, taught him an instrument. And what happens next in the film?
Well, he meets all his bandmates, Cozza,
Mm-hmm. Cozza.
Bozza.
Cozza, Bozza.
Lozza.
Lozza.
And Janine.
And Janine. And they're the band. And they're sort of, are they your proper noughties, Blur-esque band?
Yeah, no, not Blur. Excuse me, it's in Manchester, mate. Blur.
I don't know.
Beg your pardon?
What?
Oasis.
Oasis, okay.
They're an Oasis ripoff.
Okay.
But then they're doing so well on the
Mirage.
Scene. Yeah. They've just got long hair and the guitars. And but the thing is, they started doing really well on the circuit, and old Pip's introduced to drugs. Yes.
Oh dear.
Yes.
I feel this is perhaps the crux. This is the dark part.
Yeah, and then he's having a relationship with Janine,
mm-hmm.
but he can't stop thinking about Roxy.
Roxy, and so the whole time during, is this a love sequence now? Is this him taking loads of drugs, going between gig to the streets on the bus? Everything's really good. Sorry for swearing. I'm not sure if we're allowed to. Are we allowed to swear?
You are. I was actually told I was allowed to swear, and in fact, they actively encouraged me to, which I won't bow down to.
Well, I feel incredibly naughty for swearing because that's not really my style. So I apologise for shocking people.
Oh, I don't know. That's
but anyway, he's doing a lot of the sexual intercourse, a lot of the drug snorting.
And this is the Janine giving him his first drug. As you can tell from my speaking, I know nothing about the drug world, sadly. But
maybe it's morphine that you tried to get off the nurse but failed.
Hey, it's a good place to start, isn't it? I think at the age of 37, it's time I got into drugs.
Why not? You've got nothing to lose.
Exactly. Sound like that or bet Fred.
Nothing to lose except time. You've already lost the flat in Manchester. What more?
I've lost everything.
Lost everything.
Exactly.
Get into drugs, Phil. And on that note, what is the track that is played whilst he gets whilst he receives his first ever drug from Janine?
Well, what else would it be? But Blondie Dreaming.
We'll be right back.
was Dreaming by Blondie. During old Pip's drug foray. Drug extravaganza.
Dirty, dirty drugs. Yeah, that's it. And then he wakes up and he's like, ah, I don't want this anymore. Ah! It's like that bit in Cocktail when he's a toy, what do you call him? He's got like a, Tom Cruise is going out with the older lady who's paying for everything. And then he realises that he's just like a piece of meat and he goes, ah! And then he goes to see his Australian friend on the boat, but his Australian friend shot himself in the head.
I've not seen Cocktail, but I don't need to watch it now.
I love Tom Cruise.
I think Tom Cruise is a fantastic actor. Also, that film with the unicorn, the first film that
Legend.
He's a legend. Also, I think it gave me a real fetish for men who dress up as the devil. Tim Curry is sexy. Tim Curry in anything, like, goodness gracious.
Even Congo
me.
He's good in.
Oh, I get quite overwhelmed. I think Tim Curry and a young, I was trying to ethically work out when will it become inappropriate for me to still fancy 18-year-old Christian Slater in Heathers, because I remember watching that when I was a teenager and going, I've never met anything more sexy than this creature. And now, at the age of 27, I watch it going, he's younger than my brother's friends now. Is it wrong?
Doesn't matter. I still fancy all the cast of Grange Hill. I don't feel bad about that.
Okay, so we're coming to the sort of the final section of the film.
Yeah, let's shut that down quick.
So we come to the final 4 hours of the film. You've got 2 tracks left. Okay, what happens?
He's lost himself. He doesn't know what he's doing anymore. He got everything he wanted. He's got this big band, but he's not happy. He doesn't want this drug life anymore. And he hotwires a Ford Escort Mark IV, electric blue with motorsport stickers in the back. And he just starts driving.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what direction he's driving in.
And does he do this to the music of Enola Gray?
Enola Gay, yes.
Enola Gay, Orchestral Movements in the Dark. Enola Gay, he should have stayed at home yesterday. Our home is kind of scrap. The feeling and the way you lie. Fantastic song.
Great song, isn't
it? We can only play a short clip, I'm afraid. But he steals the...
That's easy for you to say.
He steals the car and hotwires it, runs away.
He's escaping.
He's overwhelmed.
He's going
off the edge. Maybe his hair's grown. Maybe it's now played by a different actor. Everything's slightly unbelievable. Have you seen Mandy, the recent horror film with Nicolas Cage?
No, but I really want to.
Oh, okay. At that moment, halfway through, he just loses his mind and the colours go completely off the wall. You're going, is this hallucinogenic? Is this real? Was he ever really 16? Is this even set in Manchester?
And it's a bit, and then manga.
Huh?
It goes manga.
It suddenly goes into animation.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, and he's battling, driving down in this electric blue car, and it's like Akira. All the stripes coming off the back of the car, he's got no teeth.
He's lost all his teeth
then.
from drug use.
From drug use, yeah. Even though he's been on it for about a week.
But in some ways, the speed that drugs hit you, like this in some way, is this the theme of the show, of the film?
Well, again, I don't really know how quickly drugs hit you, but I had a Rennie before I came in, and that was fast acting.
I've recently been given beta blockers by my doctor, and they really had... I also took Nitol for the first time, and I normally always wake up at 7 a.m. at least to start writing. Today I slept in till 10:30, and I feel very peculiar.
Oh, really?
I know. I think it's from all the sleep I've had.
Yeah, well, I don't. I try not to sleep. I try and get an hour a day.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. You can tell.
Thank you. Yeah. I need more time for crying.
Yeah. Why not?
It's good
to be in touch with your emotions constantly.
Sleep eats into a lot of sad time.
You're like the living manifestation of the artwork, The Scream.
I am, but I'm doing it on the inside.
We're doing it on the inside. So we're coming to the end of the film. Now, before we come to the end, is there anything that you want to... Like, Phil, because
do I have to go out after this? Can I not hang around the office for a bit? Because don't have anywhere to go.
I mean, we're not busy. We can teach you how to use the equipment if you want, you know.
Do you have a shower?
We've got a shower.
That's good.
Abby needs help. The intern's sick today.
So really?
Can you make tea?
I'm happy to do that for a bit of cat, you know, some spend money.
Yeah, you do what you ever need.
Thanks.
Like, it's absolutely fine.
Cool.
Yeah, you can help with some of the recycling paper when you take the compost bins out.
Yeah, happy to do that.
Have you got anything that's going on? Because, Phil, you are very funny.
Thank you very much. I have got The second series of my radio, BBC Radio 4 sitcom, is being recorded. Am I allowed to plug a different radio station?
Yeah,
cool. Yeah.
What was the first part of it?
It's called Phil Ellis is Trying. And the first series is me, Johnny Vegas, Lolly Odafope. The new series is being recorded next week, which will be out on August the 12th. You can get the first series on iPlayer. But the second series has got some of the most amazing comedy heroes of mine in it as guest stars, which is I'm very excited about. So do
we can't
do
announce
that,
but you told me privately, and I can say it's very, very exciting. And yeah, if you get a chance to see Phil perform, he is anarchic.
Oh, I'm crazy.
But now we're coming to the end of the show. We're coming to the end of my takeover to my dream films. If you like this, do tweet. Fubar Radio and Elf Lines. Follow me on Instagram or come see me live. I'm okay. Well, you know, I'm what the time's called, an ordeal. But anyway, final shot of
She's
the film.
Great.
We come to the end. He's driven the car away. It's now in manga.
Yeah. But then it all settles down, and then he looks to a hill, and who do you reckon's on the bloody hill?
Smoking a cigarette,
making clouds.
Is it Roxy?
You bet your sweet ass it's Roxy.
And does she look at him and say, I see, boy, you have now turned into a man.
I see a man before me. And that's it.
And then he parks the car.
And they bang each other.
And they have sex because he's now a man and she is his
woman.
And do they bang in the car or on the hood of the car?
They actually do it on top of some fly tip.
And some fight it, but
it's
on
an
that
old
note,
fridge.
And so I now want you to imagine Anthony Newley, Joan Collins making love and a fly tip to this beautiful song, Telstar, The Tornadoes. Thank you, Phil Ellis.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.